Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Thursday, April 25th. Today, reporters John Ingold and Michael Booth talk about the latest in health and environment news, including a new analysis on how living near airports may affect the amount of lead in the blood of kids. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Pinnacle Assurance, Colorado's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Pinnacle provides caring protection that Colorado businesses can rely on as they expand across the country. From finance to robotics and Arizona to Orlando, Pinnacle's nationwide coverage goes wherever Colorado businesses grow. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Colorado Governor John Love signed the nation's most liberal abortion law on this date in 1967. The law marked a pioneering moment for Colorado in the heated national abortion debate. Elected first in 1962 by defeating Steve McNichols, Love was a progressive Republican and enjoyed wide popularity. The reform, introduced by Democrat Richard Lamm, allowed abortions in cases of rape, incest, or potential deformity, and for the mother's mental and physical health. Despite substantial protests and concerns, the law passed with strong bipartisan support. Love's political career continued to flourish, securing a third term in 1970. He later served briefly in the Nixon administration before returning to Colorado, unscathed by the Watergate scandal. Before we continue, Next 50's vision is a world that values aging. By 2034, older adults will outnumber children for the first time ever. Next 50 funds innovative programs that combat age bias, advance digital equity, and make it possible to age where you want to live. Explore more at next50foundation.org. Next, our feature story.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to the Colorado Sun podcast for the day. And Thursdays are the day we talk about news that's been in the temperature newsletter, which we hope you will consider subscribing to if you're not already. And as always, have my partner John Ingold here from the newsletter to talk about healthcare issues. We've got some environment issues to talk about. And since it's Thursday, we also encourage you to keep track of the Nuggets. It's a great time to be a Colorado sports fan. If you're not too heavily invested in the Rockies, there's a lot of other great stuff going on between the Avs and the Nuggets, and great to have some community things to talk about. John has been reporting this week about some new study that is about the aviation fuel and potential impacts on the public. There are a lot of neighbors of Colorado's small plane airports that are very worried about the leaded fuel that is used in these planes and whether there's an impact on the environment and on the people that live around these small airports. So, John, there's been a dearth of any real information, or reliable information. What does this study talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So you hit it right on the head, Mike. There's a lot of interest in trying to figure out the public health consequences of these airports being located close to population centers. And as, of course, As towns and cities are growing, they tend to move out and move around the airports that exist. So you got houses pretty close to these small airports, planes flying overhead, planes producing emissions. And if the planes are the kind that have lead in their aviation fuel, there's a risk that those emissions contain lead. And then what does that mean for public health? So this has been a concern, especially for communities in the Northwest Denver metro area around the Rocky Mountain Metropolitan Airport region. So that would be Broomfield, Westminster, Boulder County kind of places. And CDPHE, in response to some of these concerns, did an analysis that looked at already, so the state already does lead level testing, blood lead level testing on kids. And it looked at the data it already has, and it ended up sort of geolocating where those results come from and doing an analysis on lead levels based on how close these kids live to airports. It wasn't specific enough. It didn't have enough data in it to be able to do it based on specific airports. So you don't know if, you know, one airport has greater lead exposure than another. But it was able to just aggregate all that data for airports and create an analysis that said, essentially, that kids living closer to airports, especially within 2 miles, have higher than average concentrations of lead
in their blood, but the levels they do have are still a pretty good bit below the federal guidance for what would be considered a high lead level. So it does appear that there may be some correlation between living closer to an airport and having a higher level of lead in your blood, at least for kids, but not at a level that CDPHE is saying would be concerning.
And as you know better than I do on these studies, you always have to talk about the difference between correlation and causation and whether there are other factors such as the fact that people who live near airports, the housing stock might be different, might be older, might be newer, might be different economic groups that are living around the airports, and so might be other factors in going into their entire health situation. And so I'm wondering if this study, if this is one of those studies where we need a bunch more studies to follow up, or if they've already looked at those other contributing factors.
This is definitely a study that's really limited in the kinds of conclusions you can draw from it. Colorado has a lot of lead that occurs naturally in the soil in some parts. And so soil exposure to lead is one of the ways that people can get lead into their bloodstream here in Colorado. So, you know, are you living in an area that has higher lead concentrations in the soil or not? The biggest exposure source to lead in Colorado is lead-based paint in older homes. Lead-based paint, of course, has now been banned. You know, if you've been painting over, you've probably painted over the lead-based paint in your house. But if you're doing any renovation, some paint chips that come off may contain lead, and that's generally considered to be the number one exposure source for lead in Colorado. So the study does not draw any conclusions on how this lead got into the bodies and the bloodstreams of the kids who are being tested. It also doesn't make any findings about the levels of lead in the air or on surfaces, right? It doesn't do any sort of environmental lead testing. It's just looking at blood test results. And it also doesn't draw any conclusions on the health effects here. It doesn't look at the health of the kids who have been tested. It doesn't try to determine, you know, whether kids who had slightly higher concentrations of lead or slightly below average concentrations of lead, you know, was one group healthier, was one group less healthy. It doesn't try to draw any conclusions on that. So it is a really limited look at this. And again, the way CDPHE has presented this, which they haven't actually made this really public. They haven't released this. They say they're getting it peer reviewed for possible future publication in a journal, but that hasn't happened yet. When I put in an interview request to ask them about it, they've said they don't want to talk more about it publicly until it's been published. But they did do they provided a briefing to Westminster City Council members, which you can, if you go on the Westminster City Council webpage and you look up old meeting links, you can watch on YouTube. It was a March 4th study session of the Westminster City Council where this was discussed.
A reminder also that it's the word public is in the name of the health department, and so part of their job is to talk to the general public about what this means and whether there's something else they should be doing. So is anybody, when they talk to Westminster City Council or answered the few questions of yours that they did answer, are there any indications of what the neighbors were worried should do next or might do next in terms of their pursuit of more answers and more detail?
Yeah, so CDPHE's big argument here is for more testing, more expanded testing. This was an area of concern that Westminster City Council members had when they were asking. It was Dr. Ned Kalange, who's the chief medical officer for CDPHE. When they were asking Dr. Kalange about this study, they were raising concerns about it, and they were saying, well, hey, how do we know this is reliable? And most especially, how do we know that CDPHE is doing enough testing so that we actually have a true picture of what's happening with this lead exposure to kids? And CDPHE has acknowledged that, you know, lead level testing is not as high as it potentially could be. And so their argument would be that they'd like to see more expanded testing, and they would, you know, encourage folks if they're worried to go get tested. So Mike, I want to take a pivot here, and we're going to look at some good news on your side of the front. Now, this has to do with solar power, and Colorado, once having been a little bit ahead of the curve in getting residential solar power or solar gardens up and running and getting connected to the grid. And then in recent years has sort of fallen behind, but there's some momentum now to push Colorado back ahead. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yes, we have taken the radical position that more expansion of solar power is largely a good thing. We can argue about who should be subsidizing it or how much the government should be subsidizing it. That's a different argument, but obviously growth of solar in a place like Colorado that has a lot of sunshine to replace the dirtier sources that are bad for air pollution should largely be a good thing. And there are a couple of good, if you are assigned to that point of view, then there's a couple of good things going on. One is that the federal government announced that Colorado is getting a $156 million grant from the federal government to expand individuals' connections with rooftop solar on individual homes, and also expanding the development of community solar projects, not the huge utility scale projects that Xcel might build for itself or that you might see out there when you're driving on the plains, but the sort of smaller community couple of megawatt gardens that you might see over a parking lot or in open space on the edges of the city. And so this $156 million will go to the Colorado Energy Office. They will spend the next year and a half or so writing the rules, figuring out how to get these grants out to individual people. And the idea is that there are a lot of people out there who would like to benefit in the clean energy revolution, participate in the clean energy revolution, but also benefit from it financially by paying less for their electric bill, by creating their own solar to replace that electricity generated by Xcel or other utilities. And it's just too expensive for a lot of people, or they might be renting. So maybe a multi-unit apartment building there, you might have a landlord that's interested in putting a solar array on their roof, but it makes it prohibitively expensive. They'd have to raise rents too much. So in both of those cases, these grants could go directly to the individual. They could go directly to a landlord or a developer who wants to put them on a multifamily unit apartment area, or they could go to these community solar gardens. And so that could be a really big boon for people who have not had the income available yet to put one onto their own roof. And it will be a big boost to something that Colorado used to be a leader on, but we've fallen behind on in recent years, and that is the community solar gardens. So what is a community solar garden exactly? I mentioned that it might be built over a large parking lot that you've driven by, built by either a private developer or in some cases Xcel itself, sometimes by a nonprofit. And they build this array, and then they go out and look for subscribers who are willing to pay $75 a month or a certain amount per month to own a share of the electricity that comes out of this community solar garden. The electricity is put back out on the grid. And so in the case of Metro Denver, Xcel has agreed to purchase the electricity generated by this community garden. And then you get, as a subscriber, a credit on your bill every month. And it could be $75 off your electric bill or more than that, if more generous tax credits are available. And again, lower income families have not had as much chance to participate. A certain number of community solar gardens built by these developers are supposed to be set aside for low income using some of the funds that we pay as extra fees on our monthly utility bill. But Colorado used to be the leader. In fact, we are one of the first, if not the first, state to require Xcel and utilities and the Public Utilities Commission to work together to allow these community solar gardens to be built. In the meantime, other states have caught up. They've written more clear laws. They put more pressure on their utilities, and more have been built. And Colorado has been falling behind in terms of the number of these new ones we develop every year. So there's a bill in the legislature that will try to get Colorado back on track. They will simplify the rulemaking for it, simplify the connections, make sure that people, lower income folks, are able to get the full local and federal credits that they're available to them, and make it more attractive to subscribe, help subsidize more subscriptions, and just overall put us back on the track of making it more attractive to developers to plan a community solar garden and get it done and ease the way it's done with the PUC and the local utility, so that we will be building more of them and more of our electricity will come from that clean solar source.
In terms of our overall electricity needs or our goals for clean energy, how much of an impact can we make here with either home solar or these community solar gardens?
They can make a big difference. And what they're hoping that in the future they make an even bigger difference on is people will be pairing these individual rooftops or these community gardens with battery storage systems. so that when solar energy goes down, obviously 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night in the summers in Colorado, there is all this distributed battery storage out there where people can either power their own homes or put that power from their batteries back out on the grid and not have to flip the coal-fired power plant or the natural gas-fired power plant back on to handle people's evening air conditioning and their evening cooking and their evening hot water heating, and that it could come more from these batteries. Interesting reporting coming out lately, and we will be including some of these charts in next week's temperature. California has had such huge success developing solar with a lot of state subsidies and state incentives combined with the growing federal incentives, that there are days now where 110% of their midday electricity needs are being done by wind, water, and solar. They have a WWS figure as part of it. So all of it coming in the middle of the day from renewables. And as they build more and more batteries in the evening time, even, they can get close to 100% of their energy needs from all of these renewables, drawing on the battery storage that was created during the day when they generated more than they needed. So California is moving far ahead. Colorado would like to catch up a little bit with that. And there are people in the legislature, including some of the leadership, who have the ability to push through these bills in the last couple of weeks, even though it's a busy calendar. When you have the president or the majority leader's names on it, tends to move a little faster. So they have high hopes for this bill. And obviously the $156 million from the feds won't hurt.
Well, Mike, hey, thanks for your reporting this week, and thanks for taking the time to talk with me.
Thanks, John.
And everyone, thank you for listening again, and we will see you back here next week.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. There is a chance Colorado voters will be asked to allow more gambling tax revenue to go to water projects across the state. Currently, there is a $29 million cap on gambling tax revenue going to projects. However, a bipartisan bill has passed the House and is in the Senate that would ask voters in November to eliminate the cap. The sports betting program was approved by voters in 2019. According to the Colorado Department of Revenue, since 2021, more than $43 million has been transferred to water projects, with cash for water projects nearly tripling during that time. One of Colorado's reintroduced wolves is dead, and another is likely expecting pups. According to U.S. wildlife officials, a wolf found recently in Larimer County appears to have died from natural causes, though a necropsy will determine the cause of its death. The agency did not say what gender the animal was. Meanwhile, state officials say data from a female wolf's GPS collar indicates she is likely in a den. If the pieces add up, this will be the first offspring from wolves reintroduced to the state. Colorado Parks and Wildlife is working to confirm the den. The Colorado Apartment Association wants a federal judge to block two major greenhouse gas reduction rules set by the City of Denver and the State of Colorado. The association says neither government has the power to go bigger on greenhouse gas regulations than the U.S. Department of Energy, which already regulates appliances and building emissions. The apartment owners say the only way they can comply with the way the rules are written is in effect a ban on natural gas, and that the energy audits alone would cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars per building, as well as millions for renovations. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. My name is Jason Blevins. I'm the outdoors writer here at the Colorado Sun, co-founder of the Colorado Sun. I'm on the weekly podcast with David Krause every Monday. And I also write a weekly newsletter. Comes out every Thursday. It's called The Outsider. Take a look at each issue has sort of early glimpses of stories. I got stuff on housing, high country business, high country culture, public lands, public land managers, kind of just about anything kind of interesting and happening on the Western Slope. Try to get into it. Ski industry stuff. I invite you to come check it out. It's one of the many newsletters we have at the Colorado Sun. Head to coloradosun.com/join and become a member and support the Colorado Sun. Appreciate you guys listening. Thanks.